Fasten your seatbelts and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip. The pressing challenge facing our state and local leaders of how to structure K-12 education during the coronavirus pandemic has only intensified during the past few weeks as the number of infections continues to surge. When schools closed in March, the traditional school system, built on person-to-person contact, suddenly had to depend on virtual connections. Schools were not prepared, and many families did not have access to the technology necessary for success. But then, distance learning was seen as a temporary measure. Now that the 2021 school year is in full swing, families are facing new uncertainty. Students and their parents want safe in-school instruction. Equally important, they want key services that are difficult to provide outside the school setting. Today, educators and administrators are continuing to grapple with a difficult task, balancing the need for in-school learning with the need to keep students and their families safe. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shireen Seward. Today, we discuss the ongoing challenges of K-12 education in the midst of a pandemic, and we explore the ways that local districts in our region are meeting those challenges while preparing for potentially rapid changes prompted by public health recommendations. Joining us today is Chad Cleefoth, Digital Learning Education Consultant for the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction. Chad, thank you so much for being here today.
Good morning, Shireen. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Also joining us from the Wausau School District is Angela Lloyd, the Director of Pupil Services, who has been instrumental in developing Wausau's plan for a return to in-person learning. Angela, welcome to Route 51.
Good morning. I'm happy to be here.
You can join the conversation, too, by calling 800-780-9742 or email us at route51@wpr.org. Callers, please allow plenty of time for our producer to answer your call. So I'd like to start by taking us back to March, when Governor Tony Evers announced he was directing the Department of Public Health Services to issue a statewide order mandating statewide closure of all public and private schools because of the spread of COVID-19. Now, the closure itself came down less than a week later. So, Chad, take me inside the Department of Public Instruction. When that order came down, when you knew that this was going to happen, what happened next?
Yeah, it seems like ages ago that this all went down, and it was, just a few short months. At that particular time, we were a bit taken aback, I would say, at the how quick it happened. But the good thing that we had going on internally is that we had been working for the last year or two on something called virtual learning time, which is specific to smaller increments of time. Districts relying on there's been a few districts around the state that have done a really good job of piloting some programs to kind of transition, kids that miss for illness for short periods of time, virtual snow days, short closures of school less than 2 weeks to be able to continue the learning experience for kids. And so we were able to kind of rely a little bit on that work that we had done and kind of amplify it out a little bit, scale it out. To just kind of kick into action and do what we could to start curating some resources and having conversations with experts in the field to find out what it is that we could do to help support those school districts to ensure that we were able to, have that equitable learning experience for all kids that when they're not in school.
So it sounds like you had a basic framework in place that you were able to build on at that time. Is that correct?
Yeah, we did. It was it definitely was a much bigger scaled out in a different situation. But yes, having that framework in place and having had those conversations and some districts we could rely on to find out what works and what wasn't working, we were really able to kind of at least put that in place to bridge that gap in that emergency situation.
Thank you, Chad. Angie, I want to talk about what happened in Wausau too, but before we get there, can you explain your role at the district? What does the Director of Pupil Services actually do?
Sure, that's a good question that lots of people have. So in the district, I am the supervisor of guidance counselors, social workers, and the nursing staff, which is why I became the pandemic manager, because I oversee those nursing services. I also do our mental health pieces, so anything that has to do with student mental health I cover, and really anything that involves students, I'm involved in that as well. So at the beginning of March, we received some legal guidance that, you know, we had been hearing in the news about the pandemic over in China, and then we got some legal guidance that gave us some pandemic framework to work off of. And that's when we knew we needed to get together, get our pandemic committee together, and really start working on what would work for our district, never imagining that within 2 weeks we would have to implement that plan.
So you were working on it before it actually happened, but then, of course, it came down so quickly. I can't imagine what teachers must have been thinking and what administrators must have been thinking when they thought, okay, we have less than a week to get this thing done. I'm curious, before the shutdown, Chad, do you know what percentage of students in the state were already enrolled in virtual learning? It doesn't have to be exact, but I mean, it has to be a pretty small percentage, right?
You know, Shireen, I don't know the exact number of students or percentage of students that were enrolled in virtual learning. It was definitely much smaller than it is now. I know that our Wisconsin Digital Learning Collaborative numbers right now are up about 500% from where they were before this all went down.
Well, online teaching is a lot different from in-person teaching, too. I hear that from friends of mine who are professors, that it really takes a different skill set to do online instruction in an effective way. So given that virtual learning was so new for so many teachers in March, what steps did you take to ensure that teachers throughout the state had the tools they needed to start teaching their students online, Chad?
You know, it was definitely a shock to a lot of teachers across the state. And, you know, the opportunity to not only teach, but, you know, student engagement and you know, those types of pieces of teaching are completely different in online as opposed to in person. And so, you know, what we did is we really started to reach out to some of these districts across the state that had some experience with the virtual learning time, and really try to find out what it was that they were doing that was working. What things were going well, what did they learn along the way? What are some hiccups in the road? Where can we help support? Where can we jump in? We really started to curate as many resources as we could to help support school districts, teachers, how do we keep those connections and communications with families? Because we were in an emergency situation. And so it was almost like a switch overnight that flipped. And so we went from one day being in class to the next day not. And so we really just wanted to do everything we could to help support in every way we possibly could.
And Angie, the shutdown turned from days into weeks and weeks into the remainder of the school year. Once you knew students weren't coming back to school for the spring semester, what happened next? How did you work through this with teachers in the district?
So right away in the spring, we began doing some tech training with staff. We had been talking with our health department for a long time at that point, and they were anticipating that fall was going to be difficult with the virus as well. So we wanted to prepare teachers the best we could. So we did a lot of training on flipped learning, a lot of training on our different virtual platforms to make sure that the teachers had the tools that they needed in order to provide that virtual instruction.
Can you elaborate on flipped learning? That's a phrase that I've heard a few times, and I'm really curious. How do you, in a nutshell, explain that to people? What is flipped learning?
Sure. So that is, and it's kind of changed a little bit over time, but essentially it is where you give the students something to work on outside of class time. And then when they come back to the class, in this case, the virtual class, they would be prepared to have discussions around that topic, have questions answered. So it's a flipped learning model. Instead of getting their instruction or the majority of their instruction directly from the teacher, they're doing learning on their own and then coming to the teacher with discussion and questions.
Okay, so Chad, when the shutdown first happened, what were some of the technology-related challenges that districts struggle with? How did they overcome those challenges?
I think it was a slow go to start with. Just really trying to figure out, how best to meet the kids where they were. DPI is really focused on creating equitable experiences for all of our kids and ensuring, all kids have the same access to the learning. Districts were, they took some time to evaluate their current situation. Obviously you're all of a sudden working from home, so we need, the access, we need devices, we need anything we can to get online when it's possible. But as we all know, families across the state don't have that same access. And so there are actually districts that were, we had teachers coming in and making copies and dropping packets off for work to continue at homes. And so, they were really focused on being able to meet the kids where they were and getting them the work so we could continue that the best we could in that given situation.
And you mentioned broadband access, huge issue in Wisconsin. A larger percentage of rural areas in Wisconsin lack broadband access compared to neighboring states. When you look at the data, it's hard to imagine how kids in some of the rural areas are managing. Angie, I know the Wausau School District has been working to address this, but in March, how difficult was it for students to connect and get their work done?
Well, luckily, we've been one-to-one for a long time, so I want to say about 7 years. So our kids already had devices that we had sent home with them. We weren't typically sending home with elementary kids their devices, but we started preparing for that at the beginning of March. And then to address the households that did not have internet access, we provided hotspots in the spring because we knew we couldn't bring any of our students in for internet access. Unfortunately, some of our teachers experienced the same things where they would have to come to a parking lot and do their classes in a parking lot. So we have plenty of hotspots now that we deliver to staff and students to ensure that they can connect and get the instruction that they need.
We've heard stories, too, about students who went home in March and then teachers never heard from them again for the rest of the semester. Angela, was that widespread in Wausau? Did you hear a lot of that?
It was more prevalent with secondary students. We welcome strong partners. So if we weren't hearing from students, we were checking them. We also have a number of social workers and counselors. We're sending our own people out at that time because everybody was kind of locked down. But we knew that if we weren't seeing our students or hearing from our students, there was a potential that they were in a dangerous situation and we wouldn't have the police department check on them.
You did do that. You had the police department actually physically come and check on some of those students?
Yes.
Roughly what percentage of students are still checked out from the learning process? Has that improved? Chad, statewide, what do you see?
I think, locally within districts, I think they're getting much better at ways in which they engage and connect with students. I again, don't have specific numbers of those cases, but I do know it's shrinking and, districts are getting a lot better with what they're doing right now and how education is changing and what they need to be successful in moving forward and making things work for their specific situations.
You're listening to Chad Kleefoth from the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction and Angie Lloyd from the Wausau School District, a discussion on how local schools are meeting the challenges created by the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. When we return, a look at how districts use the summer months to prepare for a seismic shift in modes of instruction amid a changing public health environment. You can join the conversation, too, by calling 800-780-9742 or email questions and comments to route51@wpr.org. I'm Shereen Seewert. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seewert. Chad Clefo from the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction and Angela Lloyd from the Wausau School District are here today for a discussion on K-12 education during an ongoing pandemic and how local districts are meeting the challenges associated with a changing public health landscape. We'll take your questions, too. The number to call is 800-780-9742. When calling, please allow enough time for our producer to answer your call. Or you can email us at route51@wpr.org. Chad, a year ago, digital learning represented a pretty small segment of the student population. Now, every student and teacher in the public school system has had at least some experience with it. I'm curious, now that this has become more mainstream, how do you think this will change the educational landscape in the future? For example, are snow days a thing of the past?
Well, you know, I think, you know, we've been over the last couple of years really talking more and more about digital learning. It is, you know, part of a team that I work on within DPI because it is such a powerful concept. It's really providing, you know, that not only our students, but our teachers with the skills and the knowledge that they need to navigate our digital world. And we're living in more of an always on society. We've got technology in our hands. You know, so I think, you know, implementing this into education is something that's been talked about not only by us, but people around the world. And, you know, it's an opportunity for us to leverage new tools and really to enhance and engage kids in a new way and extend that learning outside of our classroom. It is a not so great situation dealing with the pandemic. And I think things have shifted quite a bit from the emergency learning that happened back in March to a little bit more purposeful, planned, engaged experience. I am honestly excited about what this can do, not about the pandemic, but excited about where education can go. I think this has opened up a lot of opportunities to transform the educational experience, given us kind of forced us into getting more familiar with some tools, figuring out how we can leverage them to not only enhance normal learning experience, but you know, to those areas around the state that we can't necessarily get to, ensuring that we have that equity built in. And so I think that there's a lot of opportunity here to be able to do that. I think, you know, when we talk about remote learning, kind of what's happening right now more long term, it's a little bit different than the virtual learning time that I had talked about before, which is kind of your snow days and things. But I think if we get really good at what we're doing here and making this part of our everyday education, snow days could look different. And I think that's a great opportunity.
It feels like a paradigm shift. I mean, it's just a very different from when I was a kid, that's for sure. I did see that Minnesota passed a regulation that includes a built-in snow days, actual snow days, no matter what, because they kind of feel like it's a rite of childhood to have the occasional snow day where you can just be a kid again. And I thought that was kind of cool. Angie, the Wausau Board of Education in late July voted to begin the semester virtually. We all know that was a big discussion, and there was a lot of moving parts. I know the administration spent the summer preparing for a range of scenarios, regardless of what happened. So, take me through that process. What did the school district do? What was that planning process like this summer?
We actually began planning, I would say, in April. We, again, have been talking to the health department quite a bit, and they were anticipating that fall might look different and that we weren't going to be back to what we knew in January and February or how we did things. So we were trying to be proactive with that. We had pandemic subcommittees that more than 150 people were on these committees trying to come up with the best plans that we could possibly have we worked hard throughout the summer to identify different schedules that we could toggle between if we needed to. So we had the virtual schedule in place, a hybrid schedule, and then in-person learning. So we will be going back to in-person learning now, November 2nd, but we will only have right now about 64, an average of 64% of our students, it depends on the school, where they will be back in person. That's changed from what we had anticipated back in September. I think with the rise in cases, families are a little more cautious about sending kids back to school.
One of the recurring themes that keeps coming out of these conversations is that the classrooms will look very different when students do go back in November. Secondary schools I'll talk about in a moment, but first, Angie, what about elementary schools? What will be different about the elementary school experience compared to, say, a year ago when the students do go back in November?
The biggest change that kids are going to see is that they won't be in collaborative group settings necessarily. So we've always worked on having circle tables or desks in groups so that kids can work collaboratively with one another. Now the desks are 6 feet apart. All of the kids have to be facing the same direction. They also have to be in pods at recess, and they can only play in one area. So it's going to look incredibly different than what we're used to. We also have a mask mandate or a masking policy, I should say, in our district that every staff person and student and visitor has to wear a face covering while in school. We have a lot of educational videos for students on that. We're hoping that parents are preparing kids by having them practice wearing masks while at home or in the public. But we know there's going to be a lot of teaching and reteaching with the face covering.
Talking about elementary school students, Chad, what does digital learning look like for elementary school students? It's hard for me to imagine kindergarten from home. And I have a neighbor and friend who's a kindergarten teacher, and I know he said that it's been a challenge.
It's definitely different. I have a few friends that are kindergarten teachers, and I've had some conversations with them about how it looks. I mean, if you think about, you know, the skills, and you know, you're talking about you know, friendship and working together and those types of things, it becomes very difficult in that virtual situation. But, you know, I think we're getting much better at navigating and figuring out how to make that work. My son is in third grade, and so I'm working with him. I'm very lucky that I can work from my home to do my job on a daily basis. And so I do have to work with him from time to time. And he is, some days are better than others, but our local school district does a really good job of keeping us informed, keeping him informed, and, you know, really just that communication is huge. It's really an important part of that whole process.
Chad, you said you have an elementary school student at home. Do you think it's easier for high school students to manage virtual learning?
Well, I also have a middle school daughter, so she's not in high school, but I think it's a little bit more similar to the high school experience than it is the elementary experience. And I don't know if I could make that statement. I don't necessarily think it's easier for them. I think it's different. I think that their skill set is different. And so, you know, my daughter is a little bit better at navigating her online experience. But I wouldn't say that it's necessarily easier for her in what she's doing. I just, you know, looking at their experiences, they're completely different.
Angie, can you share with us the plan for middle and high school students in Wausau? I know the Wausau School District sending kids back on kind of an alternating schedule. So what is that going to look like?
So at the elementary, we do have all of our kids in person, while those parents who want to send their kids. At the secondary level, it is different because kids are passing from classroom to classroom through the day. They don't have the same teacher throughout the day. So we had to do an A-B schedule. So half the kids will be there during the A week, and the next week, the other half of the kids will be there. That's so that we can maintain the 6 feet of social distancing to reduce the spread and to ensure that we're not going to have to quarantine classrooms or buildings.
you know, some students are in person. Some are going to be opting for that virtual learning as we continue here. How are teachers managing both in-person and digital classrooms at the same time? Chad, what is that like?
Angie, being in a district, might have a little bit, more hands-on look at that. But I will say that, I think our teachers are being asked to do a lot right now, not only navigate both worlds in some situations, but really coaching parents as well, right? You know, our parents are becoming teachers in their homes for a lot of our students. So it can be stressful because, as we talked before, early on in the segment, it's a completely different experience in person versus virtual. So some schools are getting really good at how they're managing. Some teachers are being asked to do, you know, three or four sections of in-person and then one section of virtual. Some school districts are asking teachers to do both at the same time, where they're, you know, they have a camera that is leveraging that learning, and then they can answer questions at another time. So again, they're doing the best that they can and figuring out what works for them within their district.
Angie, what is that looking like in the Wausau School District? Obviously, we've got a couple weeks to go before the kids are back in the classroom, but how are the teachers going to manage that, both in-person and digital classrooms, and what's their reaction been?
Sure. I'm not fully prepared to answer that question like somebody from our education department is. I oversee all of the safety mitigations and that type of thing for the physical safety of our students. But I will give an attempt at this. So that's kind of where our flipped learning comes in. So all that learning we did last spring, where the students are doing some learning on their own when they're not physically in the classroom, and then bringing that learning back to the classroom to have discussions, questions, and answer sessions. I think our teachers are going to be using some of that at the secondary level. And again, not all of our students are coming back in person. They're going to be fully virtual. So we have fully virtual teachers as well. So the teachers who will still have in-person kids will not have as many students as they would during a typical year, which frees them up a little bit more to touch base with the kids who are on their off week or at home, as well as the kids who are on their on week and in school.
Chad, in general, how do you work with teachers to ensure they're equipped to address different learning styles and respond to individual students appropriately? Is there some specific training involved, and how much of it is necessary for a best result?
You know, I think a lot of that comes down to district professional learning opportunities, being able to provide some of that. There are, you know, at DPI, we've really tried to curate resources to help in different situations. We have some websites that have just been put up that have resources from organizations from across the U.S. and can support in that learning. The Institute for Personalized Learning, which is out of CISA 1 in Southeast Wisconsin, also has leveraged some training courses through the Wisconsin Digital Learning Collaborative, which is our statewide virtual learning platform or organization. There are, you know, micro courses. There are, you know, kind of self-paced things. There's a lot of things that can be leveraged to do some of that. But it really comes down to fitting that into professional learning opportunities within a district. And, you know, like I said before, we're getting strapped. Our teachers are being spread pretty thin, but there are resources to help support that.
And what about the non-traditional subjects? I mean, a full education relies not just on the traditional subjects like math and English, but access to music and fine arts and technical training. How are districts implementing those opportunities when in-person instruction isn't an option, Chad?
They're getting very creative. And I'm just looking at my local district, and I'll kind of call on what I'm seeing in that way. We're getting creative. They're working together in small cohorts to record lessons, kind of similar to what Angie was talking about earlier with, you know, some of that flipped learning. They're sending out some lessons and then having some open office hours, giving kids an opportunity to either record what they're doing via video or voice message, but still being able to engage kids in those areas.
And what about athletics? Angie, I'm curious about this because there was a study that just came out this week that showed that that sports doesn't necessarily contribute to the spread of coronavirus. But of course, we've had some situations where teams have had to end their season because of infections and rising numbers. How are you managing that in Wausau, Angie?
Yeah, we've had a couple of our teams, specifically football, because football is a close contact sport. You're not going to get around that. We've chosen to move forward with sports. We're going to be doing a winter sports season. Of course, it will look different than it has in the past. We still don't have an answer yet on wrestling. That's a very close contact sport. So we're waiting on WIAA to give some guidance on that. We have been following the guidelines from WIAA to a T. Sometimes those differ a little bit from what we hear from the health department. So we continuously revisit that and navigate that to make the best and safest decisions for our students.
Now, on one hand, school districts have issued technology to students for virtual learning. We talked about that a little bit earlier in the program, Angie. On the other, schools have needed to dramatically alter physical locations to comply with distancing mandates, ventilation, other changes for in-person learning. Chad, how's all that paid for?
That's a great question. You know, there are some, you know, federal and state funding options. The CARES Act has kicked in to fund some of those things. Districts are getting good at shifting funding within their specific location to just essentially get creative with you know, how they're spending the funds that they do get from the state and local governments.
You're listening to Chad Kleefoth from the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction and Angie Lloyd from the Wausau School District, our guests today on Route 51, talking about the educational challenges presented by the coronavirus pandemic and what local districts are doing in response. When we return, a look at what the future might hold and how districts are working to meet the needs of children who aren't necessarily best served in a virtual environment. You can join the conversation, too, by calling 800-780-9742 or email questions and comments to Route 51 at WPR.org. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Chad Kleefoth from the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction and Angie Lloyd from the Wausau School District are here today for a discussion on the impact of COVID-19 on K-12 education and how districts are balancing the need for in-person instruction with safety. We'll take your questions, too. The number to call is 800-780-9742. When calling, please allow enough time for our producer to answer your call. You can email us to route51@wpr.org. Most students in the Wausau School District will return to the classroom in the next few weeks. We've been talking about that throughout the program. Other districts, especially in rural areas, have been forced to pivot to virtual learning after beginning the semester in person as infections have spiked. The governor has said repeatedly during news conferences that each district has to make the best choice for its community. So one of the things that we heard parents say during school board meetings is that virtual learning just doesn't work for everyone. So Chad, how can virtual learning work for, say, students with special needs?
Shereen, we're, you know, having lots of conversations with districts across the state, and districts are doing fantastic in being able to meet the needs of you know, all of their students in their area. You know, specifically in a situation like that, you know, students that have an IEP or a 504 plan are very you know, there's specific guidelines they have to follow. And so in the in the end, that tends to be what school districts will rely on for their planning. That being said, they're really, you know, doing the best that they can. I know of certain situations where students with special needs will actually be brought into a district following safety protocols for that learning. There are, you know, certain groups that that works for. I know, you know, students without access, I've heard of situations kind of similar where they're bringing in very small groups of students that do not have access specifically so that they can continue that learning experience.
Angie, what about Wausau? How is this looking in Wausau?
So just exactly like Chad described it, we have hubs in each of our buildings. So we bring in students based on their needs. So it really is the IEP team getting together and determining if that child can receive all of their services through virtual learning. If not, we bring students in to our hubs daily to provide those services. And just like Chad said, we have been bringing kids in if they have internet access issues so that they can attend all of their classes every day.
There is widespread concern that students who live in abusive homes are falling through the cracks without daily interaction with teachers and counselors. We touched on this a little bit earlier, Angie. There was a lot of discussion about it in school board meetings in the past few months as well. So what is the Wausau School District specifically doing to address this issue now and make sure that students are getting the support they help and help that they need, and they're identified and they're given that attention?
So as I had talked about earlier, we do welfare checks, and now that the lockdown is over, we're able to send out our social workers and counselors to do those welfare checks in addition to our police officers and our SROs. So we ask teachers if they have not had contact with a child for 24 hours that they let either a pupil services staff member know or their administrator, so they can reach out again. By the third attempt within 24 hours, we will then do a welfare check on that child.
Chad, is that a similar story in other districts? I mean, schools provide this safe, secure environment where students have access to teachers and counselors and support staff. When school has to be virtual, how can this be accomplished? Are other districts doing the same thing that Wausau is doing?
Yeah, they're definitely not alone. We're seeing that across the state. You know, teachers, administrators, support staff are going above and beyond to continue to make those connections, to check in on families, students, make sure things are going well. You know, social emotional learning right now is huge, and it's that, you know, that mental health, but really, you know, in just ensuring that. It's a huge shift, and just making sure that you know, our students are feeling okay and doing those daily check-ins is really an integral part of a successful online experience.
We talked a little bit earlier about how parents have really had to step up to the plate and kind of become another teacher in their child's life, but not all parents are equipped to do that, and not all families are in that kind of situation. So what kind of support is there for students who might not have a lot of help at home? Maybe they're struggling with their lesson plans. They're having a hard time understanding the math. Angie, what kind of support system is in place for those kids?
So right at the beginning of the year, we did some in-person conferences with the students and their parents, and that was to teach the parents about the virtual learning platforms and give them information that they would need to help them along as an at-home teacher to their child. We just did conferences, or are in process right now. I think 26th and 27th is when most of our conferences are, and we're having parents back in again to see if we can assist in any way. The teachers talk to the parents all the time. We have paraprofessionals reaching out as well to see if students need additional help, one-on-one help, that kind of thing. So we're doing the best that we can with that in a virtual setting.
So when they do need that one-on-one help, is there somebody there? Is there a tutor available? I mean, what does that look like?
That's what we have a lot of our paraprofessionals doing. A lot of our teachers do office hours even into the evening to help students one-on-one and make sure they're grasping those concepts. And our initial assessment data this year is that, you know, we found that kids are making progress and they are seeing success, even though they're not in school with us. So our teachers have been doing a phenomenal, phenomenal job over this whole entire process to make sure that our kids are getting the education that they need.
What about meals? When schools go virtual, how are nutritional needs being met, especially for kids who rely largely on schools for their meals? We know that some families are in desperate situations, and sometimes those hot meals that they get at lunchtime, that's the only hot meal they're going to get that day. So how are schools working to meet those needs, Chad? I suppose it's different, you know, for every community, but in general, what are you seeing?
You know, I think those are some of the things that we kind of neglect to look at and think about when we, you know, look at a flip to virtual learning. You know, that's one of those things that you're right. There are families that they rely on, you know, a big part of them going to school is to get a meal. And, you know, without that meal, you know, we think about, you know, social emotional piece and the mental health. And if you don't have food in your stomach, the learning is really going to be neglected. And so school districts across the state have been fantastic. They've, you know, done as anything and everything they possibly can to continue those programs. And so, you know, we're not necessarily some school districts are doing the blended model. Some are fully virtual. Some are more in person than not. But, you know, they're relying on a lot of different things, bus routes. Not every school district is utilizing their buses right now, but they do still run their bus routes and have food on those buses. There are handouts at local school districts for families that can come in and actually pick those up. So they're kicking into gear. Like I said before, you know, we're relying on a lot of different people to work, to put in some extra time to make sure that, you know, some of these necessities are in place.
Do you see opportunities where schools maybe could partner with community agencies to better meet those needs? What do you think?
Oh, most definitely. I think, you know, that's the one thing right now that I love to see in a not so great situation is school districts and communities getting stronger. You've got, you know, food banks and other businesses in the local areas that are donating money and food and other, you know, technology needs to make sure we create that access, clothing, those types of things, just really to support our kids and their families.
Angie, you talked earlier about touched on the nursing staff, that you work closely with the nursing staff. What are some triggers for closing the schools after reopening? What would you look for? And how do you think nurses are going to be providing care for students who might be potentially carrying the virus?
That's been a huge part of our planning process. We have isolation rooms in each school where if a child is showing any of the symptoms, that child would immediately go there. Of course, we are asking parents to check their children every morning and make sure they don't have symptoms before they're sending them to school. Currently, our nursing staff is doing contact tracing as well. The health department is overwhelmed with cases that they're working on in the community, so it's falling on school districts to actually do the contact tracing and reach out to the close contacts. That's what we've been spending nights and weekends doing. Our HR department is in that same boat with staff. We are increasing our health aides, so we will have one per building. We haven't had that in the past. We've had shared buildings with health aides, but recognizing the need for more health aides at this point has really propelled us to use some of those grants from those US funds that I had been talking about earlier to employ more people in our buildings and get the kids quarantined immediately if we see any symptoms.
Chad, are there county level factors that appear to help or hinder the reopening of schools throughout the state? What do you see?
Well, you know, I think first and foremost at you know, the center of this is the health and safety of our kids. And so, you know, those local guidelines are in place for reasons. And I think, you know, making sure that we're cognizant of that. I guess personally, I feel that, you know, the doctors and the scientists, you know, kind of have they're the experts in this field, and I'm definitely not. And so being able to follow their guidelines to me makes sense. And so, you know, just making sure that you pay attention to that and use that as guidelines to reopening.
You know, I'm curious how you balance the need to provide an adequate education for students and the need to protect students from getting sick. From a liability standpoint, I mean, how do you balance those two things and make sure you're addressing both? How much of a challenge is that, Angie?
That's a big challenge. That's why we continuously ask the community to help us out with this, because this is not just a school district issue or initiative. Whatever is happening in the community comes into our schools. So if we're following all those safety measures that the health department and the Department of Health Services from the state have told us, with 6 feet of distancing, masking, not being in large groups, all of those types of things, we have a better chance of keeping our kids in school longer. We can control the environment in our school, but we can't control what people are doing outside of the school. And that's where it really comes, that responsibility of every individual person comes into play with all of this.
For many students whose parents didn't attend college, schools are where they learn about the paths to higher education. They figure out what colleges to apply for, what opportunities they might have. When things shift to a virtual learning environment, how do schools address this, Chad?
Well, you know, I think, you know, we still have, you know, within districts, you still have those educators that are connecting with families, with students, and having those conversations. That part doesn't go away. They're finding new ways to do it. You know, and Angie said before, you know, they're continuing, you know, to rely on different people to check in and keep those connections. And, you know, our pupil services departments within school districts are continuing to do what they do, just in new ways.
I'm curious if the school districts have flexibility in their implementation of CDC guidelines. Of course, CDC says, you know, here's the guideline for reopening school. Angie, can some practices be dropped if they're too onerous to implement, or if students or staff are unwilling to comply, or is the CDC's recommendation kind of the bottom line?
School districts still have the choice to implement them. However, you know, like Chad said, we're not scientists, we're not in the medical profession, so we're trusting what they say and what the health department tells us to do. So we are trying to follow those guidelines as closely as we can.
You know, if remote learning continues to be an important element of public education, and Chad, we talked about this earlier, it certainly seems like this flexibility is going to be key in the coming years. So what do you think schools and districts should be doing now to ensure its success in the future?
You know, I think we're getting better, and we're going to continue to get better. It is the preparation, ensuring, you know, our teachers have the skills and knowledge that they need to be successful, ensuring that our, you know, kids are safe and healthy, making sure that we are, you know, creating those equitable experiences for all of our kids, and, you know, really meeting their needs, right? We're talking about education as foundational for you know, essentially all of humanity, but, you know, just ensuring that we can continue with that learning experience for all of our kids, no matter who they are and where they are.
That's all we have time for today on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. I'd like to thank our guests, Chad Kleefoth from the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction and Angie Lloyd from the Wausau School District. Appreciate you being here. Our executive producer and on-air producer today is Rick Ryer. Our producer is Joy Ratch-Kramer. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program at wpr.org/route51. Coming up Monday morning at 10, we'll bring you special election coverage with the Wisconsin 3rd Congressional debate between Democrat incumbent Ron Kind and Republican Derek Van Orden. Next week, we'll take a tour of North Central Wisconsin's strangest, most mysterious, and unusual travel destinations. And in 2 weeks, a discussion on hate groups in our region, with a look at what could be prompting their resurgence. If you have questions for guests or an idea for a future program, email us at Route 51 at WPR.org. Until next week, we're heading out of town.